Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The practice of using electricity to treat people with profound psychological problems is not new. It's called electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT. The electric pulses are applied to the brain.
This story is about electric shocks, but it's not about ECT. Instead, it is about applying shocks to the skin of children who are misbehaving, children with extreme developmental, behavioral, and psychological problems, problems that are so severe they can be a violent threat to themselves and to others. The shocks, supporters say, can curb these otherwise uncontrollable impulses.
There is only one school in the nation that uses skin shock treatment. It's the Judge Rotenberg Center in Canton, Massachusetts.
Today, the State House is considering banning this type of skin shock therapy.
And the center has a long and controversial history. It's been called morally reprehensible, even criminal by some. It's also been called a lifesaver by others, such as this man, whose nephew is a resident at the center.
There is no cure for what Brandon has.
That's Jeffrey Sanchez. He is a Massachusetts state representative. His nephew, Brandon, has such severe developmental disabilities, he is a threat to himself.
The only options available to keep my nephew alive were locking him up in a padded cell with a straitjacket and drugging him up. That did not guarantee that my nephew wouldn't kill himself by either biting off his tongue, biting holes through his cheek, and ruminating until his esophageal tube would burn.
Brandon was 12 when he was placed at the Judge Rotenberg Center. He's now 32. He's still a resident there and still receiving the shocks.
Shocks that Representative Sanchez says are keeping his nephew alive.
When he starts to ruminate meaning when you vomit into your mouth, you chew, and then you swallow again, and then you vomit and chew and swallow again, the application is given, and it stops him from doing it. It's as simple as that.
But is it as simple as that? Today on Radio Boston, we'll talk about skin shock therapy at the Judge Rotenberg Center. As Beacon Hill renews its push to ban the treatment, we'll look at medicine and the morality behind what some desperate parents call the last hope to help their children, and others call plain and simple torture.
But before we do, WBUR's Rachel Gottbaum takes us inside the Judge Rotenberg Center.
This is a typical classroom. The kids are at lunch right now.
Glenda Crooks is director of the Rotenberg Center, and she gives a tour on a recent afternoon.
They do computer work, bookwork, and group lessons. We have special subject teachers, social studies, science, Spanish, that they get pulled out. They work with them on a one-to-one basis. They may come here, they haven't been to school in years, 17 years old, functioning in the third, fourth grade, but within a short period of time, they can jump several grade levels. So our academic program is pretty amazing.
Inside, the center looks a bit like a wonderland. Brightly colored sculptures adorn the walls. There are several arcades, a snack bar, a hair salon. There's even a yellow brick road that runs through the hall here. Crook says it's called the Reward Street.
It's amazing. We have a movie theater, an internet cafe, a contract store where the kids can spend their money and points, and we have a huge after-school activities program, so this is really full during after-school activities, but it's just fun.
The entire program at the Rotenberg Center is based on rewards and punishments. If students do not misbehave, they can build up points so they can play in the arcade, buy candy, or go on field trips with their teachers. They will lose those privileges for resorting to behaviors that got them into the school in the first place. About a third of the students here wear small electrodes attached to their skin. When they begin to act out, sometimes violently towards themselves or others, they can be zapped remotely with a 2-second shock. That's what happens to Leanne Emick. She came here when she was 17 because no other place would take her. She was too violent, says her mother, Lauren Emick.
She has sent people to the hospital numerous times. She has had so many restraints that both of her knees needed surgery. She's bit me. She's pulled my hair. She couldn't learn. She couldn't do anything. She needed to be isolated because she was just dangerous.
On a recent afternoon, Emick visits Leanne in the class where she's placing jelly beans into little plastic eggs. The eggs will be given out as rewards for other students. Emick is beaming at her daughter's progress. I ask Leanne, who is now 20, about the electrodes attached to her arms and her torso.
That's right.
So they stay on you?
You sleep with them too?
Yeah, I do.
She does. Are you ready to have them taken off?
No, because I don't know what to do if I'm frustrated. They say it's kind of like a safety guard, and I have nothing on because the stop sign because the jet hurts. It's like a little bee sting.
It did not feel like a bee sting. It felt like an extreme piercing pain.
Hillary Cook was sent to the Rotenberg Center when she was 17 because of her violent behavior.
There's other ways of keeping someone safe besides hurting them. You know, I mean, you want somebody to stop hurting themselves. You don't hurt them.
Cook says she was not given a choice on whether to attend the school. It was either there or jail. Now 23, she's studying art in Boston. She says when she was at the Rotenberg Center, she lived in a constant state of fear. That's because, she says, the shocks were used randomly.
The shocks were used for things most of the time that just didn't make sense, especially on kids that couldn't stand up for themselves. The more, you know, lower on the autistic spectrum, they couldn't really speak up for themselves. In the case of the higher functioning students, a lot of the times they'd get shocks just for swearing or for saying no. It wasn't even just for hurting people. It was for just not doing what people wanted you to do.
I'm enraged that we allow this barbaric practice on innocent, disabled children in Massachusetts.
Brian Joyce is a state senator whose district includes Canton, where the center is located. He's introducing a bill to prohibit aversive therapy using electric shock. The proposal is one of several attempts over the years to ban the practice.
No other state in the union lets this happen. The United Nations has ruled that this is torture. We wouldn't be able to do this to the most heinous of criminals pursuant to the constitutional prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. And yet it goes on in Canton, Massachusetts at the JRC.
That report from WBUR's Rachel Gottbaum. So, listeners, can you imagine what a parent has already gone through? All the options they've tried, such that they believe skin shock therapy is the only hope for their child. Can you condone it? Or does this sound like barbarism to you? Where do you draw the medical and moral line when it comes to extreme treatment for extreme cases such as these? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now is Dr. Nathan Blinkish. He is a clinician and the director of research at the Judd Rotenberg Center. Dr. Blinkish, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also joining us today from the studios of New England Public Radio in Amherst, Massachusetts, is Matthew Engel. He's senior attorney at the Northampton Office of the Disability Law Center. Matthew Engel, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, Nathan Blinkish, if I could just start with you and, you know, ask you, plain and simply, can you take us a little bit into the science and evidence, if there is any, that this skin shock therapy works?
Yes, this procedure is based on the principles of operant conditioning. And most people in operant conditioning and people that use behavior analysis, we want to use reinforcers or rewards to change behavior. But there are some cases that where the behavior is so extreme that using a brief 2-second skin shock that's made precisely contingent upon the problem behavior can completely eliminate that behavior and allow the person to have to change their life.
So on the other hand, and Matthew Engel, I'm going to get to you in just a moment, but you know, I've read also, and there's been a lot of coverage about the Judd Rotenberg Center, and one of the primary criticisms is that, in fact, there's actually very little contemporary research that supports the notion that the treatment works. For example, Dr. Saul Axelrod has been quoted in Mother Jones magazine. He's at Temple University. He says the field of treatment has moved away from painful stimuli because of public outcry and because we've devised better techniques, basically saying there isn't that much evidence because no one's doing the research.
Well, we've published a couple of papers recently. There's been papers published in this decade and in the 1990s and before that. I think there's a collection of at least 40 or 50 papers that show that this procedure works.
Okay. Matthew Engel, your response.
Sure. Thank you. There is much more literature, quite frankly, that supports the effective use of positive behavioral supports, even for people with severe behavioral disabilities. JRC will argue time and time again that the only alternative for this small class of what they call treatment-resistant individuals, we're really talking about 90 people, that the alternative is to be over-medicated and put in a psychiatric hospital. To the extent there might have been examples of that 30 years ago, it's no longer true. We have made great strides in learning how to work with people based on positive supports. And we're not just – the field of positive supports is not just about rewards and punishment. But I can cite you to one article that tracked the lives of four individuals who left JRC and went to a much less restrictive residential program and did much better by all reasonable measures. I also just wanted to mention it was interesting listening to the recorded portions of this show, and the individual, I believe, Leon, said, well, if not for the shock, I wouldn't know what to do if I was frustrated. And that really pinpoints the issue. Yes, electric shock can temporarily repress certain self-destructive or aggressive behaviors. But if you don't treat, if you don't teach someone alternatives, if you make them solely contingent on that kind of painful electric shock, we're really not preparing them for a life free of that kind of intrusive and very painful intervention. And I will say there's a lot of quotes about a bee sting. I've been stung by a bee. And
In terms of the pain that the shock provides.
Yes. I've been stung by a bee. I didn't like that, but I've also had the mildest form without spread electrodes of the GED administered to me for 2 seconds, and it was by far the worst pain. It was simply mind-blowing. It felt like an eternity.
Nathan Blinkish, let me turn that back to you, because Matthew Engel raises a bunch of points here. Let's kind of hit them one by one if we can. And I think one of them is quite compelling, that there seems to be this focus on the aversive therapy that doesn't get to the underlying causes of these behavioral problems, and that you're not actually, in the long run, equipping these children with the tools they need to change the cause of what's causing them so much, ailing in their lives.
The first thing that a behavior analyst wants to do is try to understand why a person does what they do. We've found over the years that some people with developmental disabilities engage in problem behaviors to avoid demands. Some of them do it to access attention. Some of them do it to access tangible items. And there are some people who do these things and do these extraordinary behaviors, and we can't completely understand why they do it. And a term for that is often used is automatic reinforcement. Kinds of behaviors I'm talking about are things where someone strikes themselves in the eyes thousands of times a day, where someone hits their temples to the point where they're blind, to the point people that will gouge their eyes out or do other extraordinary things that we can't completely understand why. And even if we do understand the function, there are some cases where even if we know that the behavior is maintained by escape, that we can't always solve the problem because of the difficulty of the behavior.
Okay, so let me ask you a little bit more about that, because as we heard in Rachel Gottbaum's piece, yes, about a third of the students at the Judd Rotenberg Center receive this skin shock therapy. Some of them are quote-unquote low-functioning. They may be nonverbal. They can be extremely autistic, very difficult, if not impossible, to they find to communicate with other people. But then there's also the group of the quote-unquote higher-functioning students who, as we heard in the piece, are communicative, may be able to tell you through other therapies what is causing the problem. So why use the skin shock therapy on students like that?
We still want to use procedures to try to train new behaviors. That's always something that you're doing when you're using these procedures. It's not that we just put the shock on and that's it. In fact, what we're doing is we are giving the person a new repertoire of behavior to help them solve some of these problems. The difficulty we find is that some of these people, despite years and decades of counseling, of medication, of every type of intervention that loving parents could think of, could not find something for their son or daughter that would work. And as a result, they're facing criminal charges, they're facing the massive pharmacological intervention, and they have no place to go. Literally, many of these kids, nobody will accept them into their programs. They will not accept them. And many of them have been expelled from these programs. You know, and when your child is living in a psychiatric hospital and the doctors are telling you, you know, there's nothing else we can do. We've exhausted all these procedures. This procedure is something that can help these people.
Well, let me turn back to Matthew Engel from the Disability Law Center and get you to respond to that. And also, I just want to cut to the chase, Mr. Engel, as well, and ask you, do you believe that what the Judge Rotenberg Center does with the skin shock therapy treatment does amount to a particular form of torture on these children?
I think to some extent, and there's an interesting study done by the Mental Disability Rights International, which is what I think Senator Joyce was referring to in his piece. 30 years ago, I think we had a moral dilemma because sometimes the shock did prevent very serious self-injurious behavior. Then the question becomes, do we rationalize it and say it's okay to do things on people with developmental disabilities that we don't allow on prisoners, our dogs, etc.? Hard ethical dilemma. But fast forward 30 years, now with all of the evidence of effective alternatives, if the treatment is not the most restrictive, not the least restrictive and most effective treatment, then there is absolutely no ethical justification. I want to respond to a couple of other points. Mr. Blankish talked about how skills develop once the internal shock, the repression of the behavior perhaps is accomplished. I represent a number of individuals at JRC and treatment plan reviews. I have one client there who's been there 25 years. He's still subject to what's called the GED-4, which is by far the most painful electric shock. So where is the progress? Secondly, if you look at Rachel Gottbaum's article and talking about Representative Sanchez's nephew, it says, Brandon is non-communicative. I've talked to a lot of experts in the field. All behavior is communicative. So to say that an individual is not communicating just because they're nonverbal mm-hmm. is a fallacy. And a lot of these behaviors can be traced to frustrations in communication.
I'm sorry, Mr. Engel. I do apologize for interrupting here.
That's fine.
But we actually have quite a number of listeners who...
Okay. I could go on for hours, so better that you cut me off.
Me too.
Indeed. And unfortunately, we only have about 8 or 9 minutes to go. And I do want to welcome our listeners into the conversation because this is a story that... It has to do with one center in the United States. That one center is here in Massachusetts, but it really lays bare some absolutely essential questions about the lengths that we should or shouldn't go to treat especially extreme cases and especially vulnerable people. So I want to hear what our listeners have to say about this. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's start in Cambridge where Megan is calling. You're on the air, Megan.
Hi. I actually used to work at the school that feeds into JRC, and I've seen the alternative to the electric shocks that you're talking about. It's not fun. We're talking about four grown adults holding down a child who's having a fit. And honestly, it's something that's very sad and depressing to watch. And I think that having that alternative is something that's extremely important. And the fact that it only happens in Massachusetts, people are flying their kids in to go to this school because it is their only alternative, which I think was something that was really important to add to this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Megan, thank you very much for your call. I want to turn right to Newton now, where David is calling. You're on the air, David.
Hi. I'm a forensic psychiatrist who's been retained by attorneys several times to evaluate children at JRC. And I've been to JRC several times, and sometimes they've decided they didn't want me going to JRC because I was asking to see all of the records. They don't want to provide all of the records. It's very difficult to see the full record. The records are all segregated in different pieces. One of the things that has come up is that, and this bears a separate investigation, is there's sort of a separate judicial deal in terms of the oversight of JRC.
Mm-hmm.
With one very particular probate court. The other thing is that when I've seen these kids are kids who are turning 18, so they're no longer under the guardianship of their parents. So therefore, they get to have a CPCS, a Committee for Private Counsel, a Public Counsel attorney, to evaluate whether they're incompetent. Because if they were found incompetent by this court, they would therefore be subject to having a guardian who insisted on this ongoing treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, each one of several cases that I've evaluated, these kids were not remotely incompetent.
Okay.
One was working at a Home Depot as a cashier, okay? And these kids, every single time an attorney got involved with these cases, and I saw these kids and they weren't remotely incompetent and certainly didn't want to be there or have any more shocks applied.
So, David, I'm going to jump in here. I gather what you're trying to say is that they should have been able to refuse treatment.
Yeah. The institution dropped the case because they didn't go forward when there was significant resistance to it.
Okay, David, I want to pick it up from there. Thank you for your call, by the way. Dr. Nathan Blinkush, this raises a couple issues, but I want to just sort of hone it down to this. It's widely known that this form of shock therapy isn't even allowed amongst America's prison population, right? I mean, you've heard this argument before.
Yeah, I have, and it's in the trouble.
So why on children?
Well, this is not retribution. We aren't, you know, when someone, we're not trying to get back at them for engaging in these behaviors. What we are trying to do is eliminate these behaviors and reduce them to near zero levels and give them a quality of life and teach them new things. You know, this is a treatment. This is not a sentence. This is none of those things. This is a treatment that is extremely effective and extraordinarily beneficial to these people.
Okay, on the other hand, though, the founder and former director of the Judge Rotenberg Center, Matthew Israel, in May, he stepped down in a plea bargain in connection to a case where it was alleged that he obstructed justice essentially by destroying videotapes that may have shown evidence of excessive use of this skin shock therapy on some teenagers for making a prank call, not necessarily the extreme behaviors we've been talking about. So I raise this issue because he agreed to step down as part of the plea bargain here. Tapes, you know, may or may not have been destroyed. There's an overall sense that even people at the center, while you may believe absolutely in what you're doing, you realize that society as a whole has a kind of issue with it. It makes people very uncomfortable to the point where you are going against what society has agreed is acceptable treatment for people. So why continue? Why not pursue these other options that Matthew Engel says now exist?
Well, here are the options. You want me to lay them out for you? I'll lay them out. The number first, it's just restraining the people. Okay, so we can just restrain them and have them be in mechanical restraints or emergency restraints all day long. Second, last couple of years, some people have used, you mentioned ECT in the opening, people have used ECT to treat people with self-injury. Actually, it wasn't that effective, but it has been used. You can use powerful antipsychotic medications, and those come with a whole host of side effects, and sometimes those can help a little bit, but there's many times where those don't work. And then there's even things like psychosurgery for some of these people. We have plenty of people at JRC who their parents were told, you know, look, here's another option. You can go get psychosurgery. And look, those are the treatment options. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that if people actually were to watch what goes on with these kids and to see what their lives are like when they are restrained and when they come in obese from these medications, when they come in with movement disorders because of the medications, when they come in with all these different problems, I don't believe that people would actually I believe that most people would look at the procedure and see what happens and say, yeah, that makes sense for that person.
Matthew Engel, yes, and I just want to say, unfortunately, we have about a minute to go, and I do want to just sort of turn the flip side of that question to you and say, this is the only place in the United States, the only school that does this.
So
for families who have been through hell trying to find help for their children, and they honestly feel that this is the last resort, why deny them that?
Okay. Let's not scapegoat parents. They're put in a terrible position. However, I co-authored an article with Dina Traniello where we looked at the path of how individuals ended up where the parents were in that desperate situation. And what we see is that there are many opportunities to do more effective interventions than were done. So JRC exists on the failures of the system, to use a cliche. However, those failures are becoming fewer. The successes are becoming much greater. Parents shouldn't be put in that position. But with all due respect to Dr. Blinkish, I mean, I've heard this argument 1,000 times. The only problem is it's no longer really based in reality. It's a good way to justify the treatment. But I can show you articles from the May Institute of how well people did. I have clients who did great when they got out of JRC. So with all due respect, it's something of a fiction. It may have been more true 30 years ago.
Well, Matthew Engel, Senior Attorney at the Northampton Office of the Disability Law Center, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Dr. Nathan Blinkish, Clinician and Director of Research at the Judge Rotenberg Center, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, there's a lot more we could have talked about, and I hope you continue to have this conversation online at radioboston.org. There's more after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.